committed to sharing cultural diversity through food. Welcome to El Paso Food Voices.
Welcome, I'm your host, Margot Lepe, for today's episode. El Paso Food Voices explores El Paso, Texas's food landscape by gathering food-based stories from our residents and former residents. This project offers a taste of a living history that speaks of ethnic and racial cross-cultural connections. If we're what we eat, we're committed to highlight the food-based culture and history of this city and impact it has beyond our binational border. In this spirit, let's begin our conversation on what everyone loves and wants more of, salsa, with our guest, Sarah Zubiate. So thank you for joining us, Sarah. We've known each other our whole lives. We've known each other since kindergarten, but I want everybody else to get to know you a little bit better. So you are, Sarah is the founder and CEO of Zubi's Salsa and Dips. Zubi's is plant-based and is described as a family recipe with super fresh ingredients and a whole lot of love. So let's dive into the story of love behind the salsa. Tell us a little bit more about your background.
Margot, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. And, you know, yes, we've known each other for decades and decades and decades. And so this is, it's like a dream. But I mean, you know my background, but I'm happy to share it with everyone here today. I'm originally from El Paso, as you know, and I was raised by George and Gloria Zubiate as an only child there in the Lower Valley, right off Zaragoza and North Loop. And it wasn't until I was much older, 17 in fact, that I found out I was adopted. I was the only one out of four kids to be given up for adoption, but my love for food was really ingrained genetically through my mom, my birth mom, and then also through my parents who raised me, George and Gloria Zubiate. As you know, I mean, anytime someone walked into our home, it was just, you remember, just food. Mija, what can I get you? You know, mijo, come in. And all memories were always surrounding food. My mom's traditional salsa was kind of what prompted me to want to create something that pulled together my memories of El Paso. But also, yes, I launched two different products, plant-based crema, like a jalapeno crema dipping sauce, and then a queso. But they're 100% plant-based, top 8 allergen-free. And I created it primarily to swap out at my table and my parents' tables because their eating habits could certainly use some improvement. So it was my way of making it easy. Just a, okay, here are our staples and here's a plant-based version. Tell me what you think. It passed my parents' litmus test with flying colors. And so here I am today, sold nationwide.
So you and I have been, you know, we're El Paso raised, born and bred, and we have the fondest memories growing up. What is your favorite memory in El Paso?
Oh my gosh. I mean, as you know, I live life. I live life full. I embrace people and surrounding atmospheres. And strangely enough, it's always involving people, yes. But I would say it's all of my time that was spent outside. I'm very earthy. I'm very connected with the earth. And what I've said on interviews there, you know, with El Paso Times or the news stations when they've interviewed me recently, I've always said that I always feel a little bit more grounded in El Paso, probably because of the surrounding mountains, the topography. So I would say, activities spent outdoors in the desert, in the cotton fields that surrounded my home for the longest time, taking walks by myself, you know, listening to The Cure in my ears, you know, whatever it was always surrounding outdoors and the earth. And then from there, layered upon memories and memories with all of my family and friends. That's, I know, kind of a span across many, many areas, but it's always involving my memories outside and the people connected to it.
Wonderful. And so if you know Sarah, you know that she's a real go-getter. and she just goes for what she wants. You look at her and you think, this woman, just everything fell into place without knowing her story. And that's why it's so important to talk to people and get to know them. And she's an open book. But with that story, mm-hmm. I'm sure come some challenges. What challenges have you faced in sharing healthier alternatives, especially in a city where we love gorditas, we love all our rich food? What challenges have you faced in sharing healthier alternatives to traditional dips and salsas?
Well, it's everywhere. It's everywhere across the board, because you get the first, what? No, queso de jalapeño, plant-based, what? No. And I'm like, just try it. It's a queso sauce. Try it. And if you don't like it, it's fine. You can use it in the exact same way, in gorditas, on top of pizza, in your tacos, in your whatever you're doing, in your mac and cheese, in your, to use as a Brussels sprouts topping, the crema de jalapeño, top it with your eggs. So whenever, I do have to speak to it sometimes, but thankfully I have recipes all across my website and on across news stations and everywhere, because I think in painting pictures, either through words or recipes or all of that, I think it really helps people to say, okay, well, let me try it. Then they try it and it's a, oh, okay. All right. It's kind of an awakening, right? An awakening of the senses. It still appeals to the senses the same. The crema, it's green, just beautiful lime green sauce. And then the queso, I wanted to create it to basically mimic the color of Velveeta cheese, because I love that color. It's bright, right? Like you said, we love our rich foods, but not only just rich in flavor, the complex flavor and the richness in color. That's the landscape there. It's that beautiful earthiness that I do believe I've successfully captured it in the flavor of the product. So people, while at first might scowl or just be taken back a bit, they love it. And so I can't be more grateful for the day and age that we're being raised in, with being able to spread the news on podcasts or on social media or on the news or in papers. News like this is able to be circulated a lot quicker. And yes, you're right. People oftentimes will look at me and say, God, yeah, everything did fall into place. They did. And people still do, in first meeting me, just say, okay, like this woman hasn't been through adversity. She hasn't been through difficulty, but in always starting with the fact that I love to bridge people together. The name Subiate means bridging people together. It's a bridge over a ravine. It's a Basque city in Spain, very small. Anyhow, it still honors that bridging people together. So the fact that people maybe size me up and say, oh yeah, this woman, okay, life is probably pretty easy. Yeah, I'm an upbeat, very positive person, never the victim. Just I take difficulty in stride as much as I can. But like any other person, there's been really dark parts of my life. And, it was strange finding out that I was given up for adoption. That's actually why I stayed in El Paso. I cheered at University of Texas at El Paso, UTEP. My freshman year. And then I transferred out once I kind of was able to collect myself a little bit more, make sure that I was grounded, make sure that I focused on who I am as a person and not on how being given up for adoption at birth, never being told the truth about it until I found out. It took me aback a bit, but I recovered and I've done my best from that point forward. So yeah, thank you for touching upon that, because it's certainly an interesting perspective that you have versus what a lot of other people, don't have.
What a lot of people may not know is the story also behind continuing to honor your culture and your family through the food you make, but how you cultivate all of that. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes. So now I have a farm where I cultivate this, and I grow a high percentage of my ingredients in a regenerative, organic, sustainable farm several acres. And that type of connectedness to earth is what keeps me grounded here. It's getting dirty. It's, you know, I don't have nice nails or anything like that, but it's getting dirty, being part of the earth. And so that is a huge part of, you know, why I have a larger facility, or I run my own manufacturing. I built the manufacturing facility from absolutely nothing. So learning that process, the procedure, the project management, the forecasting, the analytics, that's everything that I love, the connectedness to the earth. So now it's truly farm to fork, land to living. It's what I live, breathe, and eat. And so I don't care if you're bottom of the totem pole, top of the totem pole in terms of how you consume, eat, live. It's something that everyone can take part in and celebrate. That's one of the main reasons how.
Sarah, thank you so much. We want to thank you. And Meredith Avarca is also a part of the show. Meredith, do you have any input, any questions for Sarah?
Yes. Well, first of all, thanks for coming to the show. Take us back a little bit. I would like to learn a little bit more about this farm that you have. Where did your interest in farming came? I mean, you mentioned about growing up in the lower valley and you had cotton fields. So obviously you were surrounded by mm-hmm. landscape of farming. But where did your interest, your personal interest on growing food has come from? Is that also part of something that came from home?
Yes and no. So not necessarily in, you know, my parents who raised me, I would say, you know, there was really no connectedness there to where your food is sourced from, but it's genetic. And that's a great question, because in learning more about my biological family, my grandparents ran farms, and I have, I think, what is it? 36% Native American blood. I, you know, 23andMe and Ancestry, you can find all of this composition. And so it is truly genetic. I mean, I would have to say in this respect, because again, in craving that, the memories out here in Dallas or Athens, Texas, and my way to create home, it was through land. It was through farming. And at this point in my life, when I've lived out here, I've absolutely known my biological family. But in asking them, so are there any farmers in our bloodline? And, you know, my sister and my mom and brother, oh yes, grandmother, grandfather, absolutamente, like all of the family. So I thought to myself, that is why I have loved, but I have, again, it's more engineering based, the love for digging and researching where things are from, like where plastic is made. Is it polypropylene? Why is this able to be recycled? Why is this not? Why is this food better for you? And I love health. I am a fit person. I've always loved, appreciated balance of spirit, mind, and body. And I've always been very spiritual. But it's that regenerative farming and that sustainable farming. I mean, I'm sure everyone there knows the kind of what's being talked about more and more is the decolonization of indigenous diets. And are people able to live on sustainable farming, organic farming? Right now, no, we can't afford to feed everyone in the country. But in trying to influence the fertility of our soil, and this is something that I've really become passionate about, it's going to take a huge shift in how we consume, how we eat. So if I'm able to just make the slightest dent in that consumption and how people eat and how they learn about their food and their families, that's really how. So yeah, it's genetic for me, but there's also a lot more layered there help preserve our land, the fertility of our soil, and then better our bodies, better our health. And I think at some point in the future generation's lifetime, it's going to be something that they really have to learn to appreciate. Our food supply, it's changing. It's changing by leaps and bounds. So I think farming, soil, land is something that everyone's going to have to learn about just due to the change in our food supply. Yeah.
Just a little follow up here. I love what you said that it's in the genes. I'm not sure you're familiar with the culinary gene idea, because as I hear you talk and you keep saying about, you know, it's in the gene, and then this argument that we have about decolonizing diets, what I'm hearing echoing in your conversation is in your story is most like more like reclaiming our genes or recognizing our genes.
That's right.
Because a lot of our grandparents, I'm sure, working class, poor, they had gardens out of necessity.
Yes.
So in some ways, I think some of that food was actually probably healthier than what we're eating that is commercialized food.
That's right. 100%.
So when you're talking about the gorditas, the how to make gorditas healthier, I'm just going to interject a little personal story here. When I published my book, Voices in the Kitchen, and the main person in that book is my mother, a working class woman, Mexican woman. Anyway, we did a presentation at the University of Texas at El Paso. And somebody asked that question about the unhealthiness of Mexican food and diabetes and so forth. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things that you're talking about. Yep. And the way that she responded, which is something that I would like to hear your reaction to her comment. When my mother responded, somebody asked a question about how do you make Mexican food healthier? And, you know, she answered the question, not I. She said, but actually, traditional indigenous food.
That's right.
It's healthy. And she started talking about nopalitos, and she started talking about verdolagas, and she started talking about things that are normally considered weeds that are actually completely nutritious.
Totally.
And what my mom said is, if that is what we consider our Mexican heritage food, then it is healthy. So what's your take on that? Because we're really talking about sort of what exactly do we frame as Mexican food? Is it the colonized version? Or is it an indigenous aspect of the food? So anyway, just your thought on that story, because I hear you echoes of that in what you're telling us too.
Yes, that's a long conversation. And I've actually lectured on this specific topic before at a few universities. Well, a few, three. But this is extremely important because of food manufacturing now, there are so many chemicals to help things last longer on the shelf, you know, maintain its color. There's added color in everything that in all of our pantries, there's stuff with added color. There's stuff with added preservatives to help it last longer on the shelf and make the company more profitable. For me, it is so important to use things that you can pull from your farm, work with a little bit in your kitchen, not add a chemical, and literally do from ground up. That is something that I live, breathe, and eat, because the indigenous persons who most of us have, well, I don't say most of us, but a high percentage of the people there in El Paso, absolutely, we have indigenous blood running through us. If you go to Viva El Paso, the story of, you know, the Spaniard, the indigenous person, how the mestizos like brought us all into life. That is what it's supposed to be. And that is so much healthier than anything, not anything, you know, but a lot of things that we buy at the store. That is exactly where I'm trying to take everything back. That's where we need to move back. And of course, now in this new day and age, unless the entire world implodes and we have no more beef, you know, eggs, grass, or, you know, lettuce being sent to the stores, we're going to have to start learning how to farm a lot on our own. And that's why I have such a passion for it, because it's my roots. It's in my genes. It's in many of your genes, many of the people who are listening. So I encourage people to just learn a little bit more about it. And yes, your mother is so right. Our roots, our bloodlines celebrated the health of incredible food that is from the earth, that kept the soil fertile. That is everything that I preach. And again, I don't like to preach it, but it's something that I hope to inspire people to learn more about and to maybe incorporate in just even like 5%, 10% of your diet. You know, products like mine, there's more and more people coming up with these ways, but products out there will say, oh, we're better for you. You turn around that package, you look at the ingredient and you're like, oh, okay, there's MSG. That makes you addicted to something that's not healthy. Oh, there's added sugar here. Oh yeah, there's color here. No. So the percentage of the ingredients that might be healthier might be there, but those clean labels are so hard to find. Clean ingredients. And again, that's me bringing my heritage, my home, my bloodline out front and center into the world is my goal. And so even though I'm across the country right now, it's something that I believe must be celebrated in not just our type of families, but everyone across the world.
You make us all so proud and so motivated now. I want to go eat some calabacitas. And we just want to thank you.
Yes.
Really, we just want to thank you, Sarah, once more for sharing your knowledge on salsa and so much more. A fascinating and rich El Paso food-based culture that really speaks to our rich foodways history.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for having me here. Margo, I love you. I can't wait to see you. I can't wait to have you out here.
Aww.
And Meredith, you're invited. Adrian's invited, truly. And when I say that, I mean it. If you're ever in the Dallas area, I expect you all to email, text, call me and say, can we stop by? Because it's something that I'm so proud of. And you would be proud of too.
And we're so, proud of you.
We will do that. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today, Sarah. And Margo, thank you for leading us into the discussion. It's been absolutely wonderful.
A pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me today, Meredith. Margo, thank you.
Thank you.
And again, I look forward to connecting again in the future. Thank you so much.
Likewise.
El Paso Food Voices was created by Meredith E. Abarca, Professor of Food Studies and Literature at the University of Texas at El Paso. Produced by Adrian Mesa from UTEP's Creative Studios. Music composed by Jade Jacobs. To learn more about how food practices, memories, and stories shape a city's history, culture, and its character, please visit us at El Paso Food Voices. Thank you.